This is an interview with Chris Lintott of Oxford University about astrochemistry and the sky at night. For the full show, go to www.jodcast.net. Okay, with us now is Chris Lintott of Sky at Night fame, as the label that goes with you everywhere, I'm sure.
It is, yes.
Yeah, but you are actually a researcher in astronomy.
That's right, that's my real life, is as a postdoc at Oxford, working on astrochemistry.
So can you just tell us a bit about what you do in astrochemistry? Because I know you've been giving some talks this week.
Sure. It's a very simple solution to a difficult problem, which is if you think of where stars form in the universe, you immediately think of that Hubble picture of the pillars of creation.
So the big clouds of dust.
Yeah, the dark, dusty clouds. But that's all you get if you look at them in the optical. We want to see inside those to look at where the stars are either forming or just about to form. So to do that, you go to longer wavelengths. In particular, you use the submillimeter. It's the same frequency as your microwave operates on.
Right, the microwave ovens.
Exactly. And what that does is it gives you the signatures of a whole series of chemicals which are associated with star formation. Some of them are familiar, like water, for example.
Yep.
Ethanol, which you've probably come across once or twice in your life. And then a few strange things, hydrogen cyanide. And there are about 120 different molecules that have been discovered in space. And by studying these, you can get a huge amount of information about the physical properties of the forming star, but also about their history. What makes up the gas which is going to go on and form the star? How did that collapse? How fast did that collapse?
Yeah.
And all of this is encoded in those molecular signatures. Now, what I do is take models that people have worked really hard on for the last 30 years to explain Milky Way star formation and try and throw it out to the early universe, to distant galaxies, right, and see what chemistry can tell us about those.
Right, it sounds very interesting. But also, you do the sky at night. We have to ask you about the sky at night.
You're welcome to ask me about sky at night.
World famous sky at night. Tell us about the 50th anniversary, because that's this year.
And it is.
Your special programmes quite recently.
That's right. It's been a great honour to be working. Well, it's always an honour to work on the programme. But for the 50th anniversary, this is something that I think people have been looking forward to for the last 20 years. So we desperately wanted to do something that felt like a celebration and which was fun while having a lot of astronomy in it. Because one of the things that people forget is that the Sky at Night's never been afraid to have a bit of fun with the subject.
Yeah.
If you go back through the archives, you find occasional things like Heather Cooper being projected onto a Hertzsprung-Russell diagram, or Michael Bentine and Patrick being replaced by aliens. We wanted to have part of that tradition too. So we came up with this idea of looking 50 years back to the very different world of 1957, and then 50 years forward to the future as well.
And it's quite nice because it ties in with the launch of Sputnik as well. It was the same year.
You know, it was an incredible time 50 years ago.
International Geophysical Year.
Exactly. This launch of the space race. There's obviously a burst of interest in astronomy as well, because I've had so many invitations this year and last year to talk at 50th anniversary events for local astronomical societies. So space was definitely on people's minds, even before Sputnik. Jodrell, of course.
Yeah, the Lovell Telescope was completed.
And we wanted to get a sense of what that world was like, because it was very different from where we were now. If you look at what we knew, then it's almost mind-boggling. For example, take Mars. There was serious argument that the dark areas on Mars had to be vegetation.
Was that still going?
Yeah, it sounds ridiculous now, but the justification is very sensible. Mars is a dusty planet. Any features are going to get covered in dust. We know it has dust storms. So therefore, the only features that remain must be pushing up through the dust. What does that? Well, it's plants. Of course, that's the opposite to the real answer. It's the dark areas are areas where the dust has been blown away. But it's things like that that bring home how much life has changed in 50 years. Well, that in the dress sense.
it was quite fun watching that Sky at Night issue, and you had John Kilshaw, the impressionist.
That's right,
the young version of Patrick.
Yeah, that was a masterstroke. That was our producer's idea, Jane Fletcher, who never gets enough credit for everything that happens behind the scenes. But the first programme wasn't recorded. Some of the archive has been lost, but most of the early programmes were never recorded because tape and film were expensive. Plus, it was only television. Why would anyone want to watch television again? So
there's not been anything found in anyone's garden shed or anything?
We do have a programme from 1957, not a Sky at Night, but a programme called Frontiers, which was a general, very formal chat show with Patrick on it, discussing the RAF's attempt to produce a spacesuit.
And was that successful?
Well, it was an interesting design. I think it was in response. It was just after Sputnik. So it was a what will happen next type of affair. So it's interesting to see that world. And I don't think the basics of television haven't changed. You try and tell the story as clearly as you can, but not miss anything out. And that's what we're still trying to do. But to go back to John Coleshaw, so we had bits of archive and we thought we could cobble something together and have Patrick interview the archive. So, so Patrick, what do you think about Venus? And get the archive clip from 1960 that says, well, Venus's day is very long, or whatever else. But we found out John Coleshaw is an amateur astronomer. And he's an amateur astronomer whose first ever impression was of Patrick.
Fantastic.
And we recruited him, and the moment when we had the two Patricks in the same room talking to each other was actually quite special. So John was a great spot. Patrick, who wrote most of the script, really, I think he enjoyed himself. And it was nice to have part of that world. Odd to see it in colour, because you forget that the people, were, if you're physically there, the people there were in colour.
They weren't all black and white or sepia, yeah.
Exactly. And then we wanted to go forward, because this is not the end of The Sky at Night. Our next anniversary programme, which goes out first Sunday in May, is the second half of the party, which is lots of looking back, lots of how was it for you, and lots of archive, which would be great. But we wanted to make the point, we're not stopping, we're planning June. And so
the next
we thought,
50 years.
Exactly. I want to go to the 100th anniversary party of The Sky at Night. So we skipped forward. But of course, Patrick still had to present it, because this is a celebration of what he's done. So clearly,
he's the longest running continuous presenter, I think, in the world.
Absolutely.
Like
yeah, and that record will never be beaten.
There
won't
be. Just
missed
one episode because of.
Of a duck egg
yeah.
or a goose egg. I can never remember which. It depends who's telling the story.
Right.
What happened there was that he was in hospital when we were supposed to be recording the programme. We recorded the programme without him. And luckily, by the time of broadcast, he had recovered enough to advise us on what we wanted. And the BBC offered to delay the programme for a week so that he could present it. And he refused because he said the programme was much more important. And that sums up his attitude to the whole thing.
That's a great attitude, actually. And I have to comment here that I think the BBC mess around with The Sky at Night and they put it on an awful time. I'm sure you can't say anything about this.
I agree.
But they put it on an awful time of the night. I mean, I know astronomers are supposed to be up at night, but
it is frustrating when you put a lot of work into something and then it goes out at 2 in the morning. But, hopefully it matters less than it ever has done because people do record it. And, of course, you can see the last 3 years' worth of Sky at Night on our website, which is bbc.co.uk/skyatnight.
And we'll put a link to that in our show notes
Excellent.
As well.
Excellent, good.
So people can watch online to all 3 years' worth of programmes.
Yeah, it goes back just a bit more than that now. We're coming up to 4 years of archive on there. It's only a small window, but you can hide it in the corner and get on with some work while listening.
Well, that's excellent. Thank you very much for talking to us.
A pleasure.